Hi, I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and this is Toxic Free Talk Radio, where we talk about how to thrive in a toxic world and to live toxic free. And it's getting warmer and warmer every day here in Florida. So, today is Thursday, April 3rd, 2014, and I'm here in Clearwater, Florida, where it's getting warmer and warmer every day because spring is coming, summer is on the way. You know, when I first came to Clearwater, Florida, it was about 12 years ago, I arrived just about this time of year, and it was 94 degrees, and I thought, oh my God, if it's 94 degrees at the beginning of April, what is it going to be like in the summertime? But I found that it's not 94. In fact, it's never been 94 again, and it just happened to be that year. But we're having beautiful days now, but it's getting warmer, and I've had the windows open for the past 4 or 5 months, and the days are coming when I'm going to have to turn on the air conditioner. So I thought that we would do a show today about how we can cool our homes naturally, save money on our energy bills. And I decided to invite Paul Wheaton, who's a well-known permaculture expert. And he's been on before. He did a great show about compact fluorescent lights may save energy but can harm your health. And then in the middle of winter, I invited him back to talk about how we can heat our homes, which was another great show. If you want to listen to those shows, you can go to toxicfreetalkradio.com. And just type in Paul Wheaton in the search box and his other shows will come up. Anyway, so we're going to talk about cooling our houses today in a natural way. But first, I know you've been on the show before, but I'm sure we have some new listeners that don't know you and they don't know what permaculture is. So why don't you tell us a little bit about your background, what permaculture is, and how you got interested in cooling homes naturally?
Oh, my. Okay. Well, I've been called a lot of things in permaculture. Occupy Monsanto calls me the bad boy of permaculture.
Oh.
The guy who I call the crown prince of permaculture, so this is the guy that kind of helps to define what permaculture means today, he has dubbed me the duke of permaculture. So, recently we had the Permaculture Voices Conference, which is probably the best conference ever done in permaculture, and I was one of the keynote speakers next to Michael Pollan and Joel Salatin and Alan Savory and Willie Smits and all these amazing, amazing people. Does that kind of give you a little bit of an idea of who I am?
Yeah, good. So tell us
is that good enough? I mean, I don't know.
Good enough.
I would have to say that I advocate a flavor of permaculture, and other people in the permaculture world advocate different flavors. I seem to have the largest audience. I have podcasts and videos and forums and all that stuff, and I'm always looking forward to the opportunity to infect more brains with my stuff.
Oh, good. So tell us a little bit about your flavor of permaculture. One thing I'll just say about permaculture is that I have a background in permaculture, but not as much as you, Paul. But I was one of the co-founders of the first permaculture group in the San Francisco Bay Area many years ago when permaculture was just starting in the United States. And so it really is, it's a whole different way of thinking. And I'll just make a general statement here and then Paul will tell us his particular flavor. But it's difficult to define permaculture because it's about, the word stands for permanent agriculture, but it has expanded to mean any sorts of technologies that fit into a way of living that creates a sustainable system. Would you say that's a correct definition?
I think so. I mean, it's it is something where you start to learn a little bit about permaculture, and then I think after you've learned, oh, look, this thing, and then this thing, and then this thing, and then this thing, and after you've got like 24 interesting little tidbits of permaculture, there's a moment in your life where suddenly there's this massive click sound, and suddenly you see everything works a different way. Everything kind of falls into place, and you see a whole different way of doing everything.
A whole different way from the industrial way that we're accustomed to doing it.
True, and it's like you can do. It's not like I think when you're bonkers about permaculture, it doesn't mean that you're going to go out and say, oh, everybody else, your stuff sucks, you have to stop doing it. It's not like that at all. It's like, oh no, it's more of a personal thing. now I'm going to go down this path. And that big click sound has led to a lot of divorces because, well, you know, two people and a couple will both be interested in permaculture. Then suddenly one person has the click and is like, now I'm going to go and travel. I'm going to run my life this way. I'm going to do these things in this different way. And then the other party is not so much. But I don't know. Now I'm worried. Let me just say what my quick definition of permaculture is.
Yes, please.
A more symbiotic relationship with nature so that I can be even lazier.
I like that.
And I think that ties in well with what we're going to be talking about today. Because I don't want to scare people away, like, oh, you start listening to this stuff, and then suddenly you're going to get divorced. let's set that aside for a moment.
But it really is that kind of shift in the way you see the world. And I know that learning about permaculture was one of the things that I was exploring at that time in my life that really made me see that we can, it's like I, as a person, see myself rooted in nature, that I live in nature. There's this industrial world that also inhabits the earth, but I am relating to nature more than I relate to industrialism. But that was a huge, huge, huge shift that I went through. So that doesn't mean that I don't live in the industrial world or I don't drive a car or buy food at the store, all those kinds of things. But my awareness is that there's a big ecosystem of the planet and there's all kinds of resources and flows and all kinds of things that we can be interacting with. And in fact, were it not for the planet, we would have no industrial system at all. So there, that's what I think.
Horticulture is a large aspect of permaculture, and it's kind of like, what's the difference between conventional, organic, and permaculture? And then, of course, conventional is where you're going to, you know, do a lot of tilling, you're going to do a lot of spraying and stuff like that. Organic is typically where you're doing conventional, but you've replaced your toxic GIC with less toxic GIC that is OMRI certified. And then permaculture is going to be more like, if you have a plant that has bugs on it that are not, you know, like they're hurting the plant, rather than trying to kill the bugs, then what you do is you say, why does this plant have bugs, but this other plant, which is the same species over here, doesn't?
Uh-huh.
And so what did I do wrong with the first plant? And what can I do to emulate the second plant so that, the you know, in the future, any plants that I plant like this won't be covered in bugs? That's permaculture. Where
I would agree.
Know?
And so that kind of thinking gets applied to everything you do.
Yeah, yeah. And including today's topic about how to be luxuriantly comfortable and cool in your rather hot climate while reducing your energy consumption for air conditioning. And I want to say that what I advocate might be a little bit different from what other permaculture people advocate, but I think step one is be luxuriantly comfortable. And it's like, so a lot of people are like, oh, no, you have to suffer. Now you're going to be hot. And I kind of think, no, don't do that. You know, keep your AC, keep it. And let's see if we can find, I mean, but the thing is like, how much do people down in Florida spend on AC every year? I mean,
A lot. I mean, in the summertime, like I live in a house that is about 1,600 square feet, and I spend $300 a month in the summertime. That's way too much.
So thousands of dollars per year.
Over $1,000 a year. I would say I probably spend $2,000 a year on air conditioning.
Now, so much in permaculture is about how do we improve the environment? How do we improve, reduce toxins in our life and things like that? But you know what? Let's just focus on a moment on thousands of dollars. You know, granted, for some people, it's like thousands of dollars, no big deal. I'm not going to think about it. But it's like...
It's a lot for me.
There you go. For a lot of people, it's like, well, with thousands of dollars, you know, go on a lovely trip, buy more pie or whatever, you know, thousands of, there's lots you can do with thousands of dollars instead of just always paying for air conditioning. And it's like, okay, how can we make this really easy and you can have your thousands of dollars back? And so I think step one is, no, be luxuriantly comfortable. And I'm an odd duck in the permaculture world in saying that. But, you know, I don't want anybody to feel hot. Let's look at being comfortable.
Well, let's talk about being comfortable first, before anything else. Like, for one of the things that I did was that I figured out what is the temperature that I feel comfortable at. And I didn't follow the national guidelines for where you're supposed to set your air conditioner in order to save energy. What I did was I figured out what was the right temperature for me. And it turned out to be exactly 78 degrees.
Okay.
So I don't set my, I think they recommend 72 or something like that, so that you're not setting it to 68 or 65. And so what I'm trying to achieve for 6 months out of the year is a consistent 78 degrees in my house.
All right. I that's cool. I know that there's a lot to be said for acclimating. I mean, I've heard stories of people visiting these desert lands in the Middle East or whatever, and it's like it's, you know, 100 every day, but the people there have gotten used to it.
Right.
And they don't sweat. Whereas, you know, we show up and it's like sweat. So it's kind of like one of those things where, yeah, acclimating is something that can really make a difference. But I took a few minutes before our show to put together a list, and there's a bunch of stuff that is really easy to do, and hopefully it's going to be quite adaptable. I also want to take a moment to point out that a lot of people might listen to a lot of this and think it's not true or that we're not doing it or whatever. And I want to combine in a show that you and I did before on your program about light bulbs. And I just want to exercise bragging rights, because there's a friend of mine and I for 20 years argued about how to save energy. And back and forth. And then finally there came to be this time where he wanted to go to Mexico for 4 months. And I just happened to be about to move to Montana. And so then he said, could you not go to Montana just yet and maybe stay at my house and then go to Montana while I'm in Mexico? So that's what ended up happening. The important thing is that when the energy bills came back, so for all the years that he owned that house, he was like doing his recipe for saving energy, including using fluorescent light bulbs. And one of the first things that I did when I showed up is I took out the fluorescent light bulbs and replaced them with incandescents.
Yeah.
And you know, that's tied into the show that you and I did before.
Right.
And but my energy consumption was one quarter of what his best energy consumption ever was for the entire time that he lived there.
Wow.
So
you're going to tell us how to do that. Go ahead and start. We're going to have a break in about 2.5 minutes, but you can start.
Okay. Now, we can talk, rather than talk about the things that I did there, I'm going to just start with the beginning of, like, you want to have a cool house? Number one thing is trees. You plant trees. It's a very simple thing. Trees are going to give you a lot of shade, and not just shade, but layered shade. And layered shade is going to keep you much cooler than just a single layer of shade. So that's an important thing to keep in mind. And trees are going to do that, especially freaky big trees.
Like, I have
trees.
If
you've got a tree in your yard that's like 150 feet tall, if you see a tree like that, stand in the sun and then stand under that tree. I think you will be shocked at this downflow of cool coming onto you from the tree, from above the tree.
I can vouch for that, because my house is actually in a grove of ancient oak trees. And so I actually have difficulty finding enough sun for solar here, because it's not completely shaded, but it's kind of dappled shade. Everything is dappled shade where I live. And I think that it greatly contributes to keeping my house cooler.
And along the lines of solar, I mean, one of the things I want to go into is layers of shade for the house and the roof. But if you've got solar panels on your roof, they shade your roof. And it's amazing how much cooler that makes your roof. So, so if you've got solar panels that are mounted like 6 or 8 inches above your roof, then they're not only augmenting your energy or, you know, whichever kind of solar panel you have, but in addition to that, they're providing a lot of cooling in the hot months. And in addition to that, they'll also help to hold in heat during the cold months.
Well, we're about to go to break. In fact, we're going to go right now. But I have something that I want to say that relates to that and that has to do with permaculture when we come back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Paul Wheaton, well-known permaculturist. And we're talking about how you can cool your house and lower your energy bill doing it naturally. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Dadd, and my guest today is Paul Wheaton. He's a permaculturist who's here to talk about how you can lower your energy bill and cool your home by being, what was what you said, luxuriantly comfortable?
Luxuriantly comfortable.
Yes. So now tell us, repeat what you said right before the break about what the solar panels do to when you put them on your roof, how it helps keep your roof cold.
Well, the big thing is like the solar panels are going to be mounted on your roof. They're going to be kind of aligned with your roof typically. I mean, you could change the angle of them slightly, but they're typically going to be mounted so that they're kind of like, you know, 6 to 8 inches above your roof. And so then that means that they are shading your roof. And basically, that's a lot of the stuff I want to talk about is what you want to do is you want to be able to shade your entire home. And this means shading your outside walls as well as shading your roof. And there's a variety of different techniques that can be used.
Well, before you give us that, I just want to make my point here. Okay, so I'll just repeat what you said. You put up a solar panel, and it produces solar energy, and it shades your roof. Now, this is one of the permaculture design principles of having things do perform more than one function. Isn't that cool?
Yeah. Stacking functions, absolutely.
Yes, and so one of the things when you're designing, people who become certified permaculturists take what's called the permaculture design course, and it teaches you how to construct systems. And one of the basic things is to have everything in your system, or as much as possible, perform more than one function. So if one of the items breaks down, then you still have something else as a backup right there. And I think that that's a very clever thing, but that's something that nature does. And so this is how nature can be so stable within its symptoms, because more than one thing can perform a function. I think that's so clever, and so it's just, that's the way it should be. Okay, now you can go on.
Well, yeah, and if we go out and we do like 15 different things to make it so that you can be luxuriantly comfortable, and then next thing you know, your air conditioning bill goes from $300 a month down to like maybe $20 a month.
I would love
that. Then if something goes wonky, then it's like no big deal. There's a bunch of other things that were done too. So, you know, maybe you'll fix it next month. You know, no, it's a multifaceted thing, which is how nature, as you point out, which is how nature works.
Right.
It's kind of like how plants get water in nature. It's not just one thing. It's a list of things. It's a long, long list of different ways that plants get all the water that they need naturally.
Isn't that wonderful?
All right, you ready to go on
yeah,
to the list?
Yeah, let's go on. Let's go on with what more you can do to cool your home.
Okay. So layers of shade. And so one thing that you can do is either over your wall or over a window is, and this is something that I know that you're very familiar with already, is you can put in an awning.
Uh-huh.
So an awning is going to, mostly people will put an awning over the window. But I got to tell you, if you can put an awning over the wall and the window, that will do much more. Now, I'm going to go even a little bit further, and I'm going to say do an awning and a shade. Now, you want to get natural light into your home to be able to live your life during the day inside. And I think having natural light is far superior than any kind of light bulb. And so
I totally
you're going
agree.
To want to do that. Pardon?
I totally agree.
So usually, if you're like, let's say you're working from home, usually in one room you're going to be in, and the rest of the house you're not in. In which case, boy, you can bottle up the rest of the house. You can have it get downright dark from multiple layers of shading. But in the one room that you're working in, then make sure that you're not blocking off too much light. You want to be able to have some light to be able to work from home. Now, you have your awning out, but you could hang a shade from the front of the awning, like one of those bamboo kind of roll-up shades.
Uh-huh.
And you could also do another layer even closer to the window. But you could also do these bamboo shades on the walls as well, on your exterior walls. I wouldn't bother doing it on the interior walls, but if you have layers of shade against the walls of your home, that will do immense things for cooling your home.
Okay, so if I wanted to, like, for me, I think on the east side of my house gets the most exposure of sun by the time it gets over to the west side during the day, because it goes from east to west over my house. And by the time it gets to the other side, I've got two big trees in the front yard, so it's pretty shaded. So it gets the most sun on the east side. So are you saying that if I put bamboo shades on my exterior walls, it'll keep on the back end in the east, that it'll keep my house cooler? And how far away from the wall do you need? You just lay them right on the wall?
I wouldn't lay them right on the wall. That's not going to really help. But, like, you know, let us suppose for a moment that your home has an eave on it.
I do have an
eave. Or even better yet, it has something of a porch. Then in
it
which
doesn't
case
have
you
a
would
porch.
Hang... Okay, what's that?
It doesn't have a porch.
Does it
no
have
porch.
An eave?
It has an eave.
Okay. So I would say you would probably hang it from your eave.
Okay, good.
And then, you know, if it's a large eave, it might be 3 feet away. And so, in which case, you could even explore the idea of doing, if it's 3 feet away, if 3 foot eave, you could even explore the idea of doing two layers of shade on your walls. But if it's a room that you're going to be doing a lot of stuff in, you might only have one layer of shade over the window.
Uh-huh.
So another technique is to grow hops. So hops is going to be a vine that will grow very rapidly in the spring and early summer and leaf out and then provide layers of shade wherever you plant it. So it's possible that, you know, if on your south-facing wall, you might grow a lot of hops. This is a very common tactic in the world of permaculture, and it's been done for hundreds of years, actually, to help people cool their homes. So hops just grows really fast. And then, of course, you know, when your big frost rolls around in the fall, then it dies right off and it's gone. So now the sun can get in again and,
yes,
and warm you.
Yes.
So... And now you said you don't have a covered porch.
I don't.
And I imagine almost everybody believes that a covered porch is a lovely thing.
Well, I'll tell you, actually, this house does have a covered porch. I'm sitting in it right now because somebody, before I bought this house, turned it into a room.
Well,
we have here in Florida something called the lanai, which is a room that's kind of screened in on the back of the house. And that now is my office because somebody put in windows and took out the screen. Anyway, we need to go to break. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Paul Wheaton. We are talking about how to cool your house, and his website is richsoil.com. And you can find a lot of information there about how to do things in the permaculture way. Lots of videos and podcasts and interviews. And just go to richsoil.com and take a look around. We'll be right back. You're listening to Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lindad, and my guest today is Paul Wheaton, well-known permaculturist. His website is richsoil.com, and we're talking about how to cool your home. Okay, tell us more, Paul.
Oh, man, I've got such a list, and we're running out of time fast.
I know, so let's go faster so we can at least mention them.
All right. So one thing I think most people probably already know in your area is to vent the roof. And so if you've got a ceiling that's insulated and then a roof above that, that it can get to be 140 degrees in there, which heats up your home, even though you might be insulated from it. If you vent it out, it does amazing stuff for cooling your home.
And I've done that on my house, and I have a solar fan in there too.
Ah, good, good, good. Next one, is this is a crazy thing from a book I read over 20 years ago about somebody who was trying to grow more stuff in their teeny tiny lot in San Francisco. So what they started to do is set up scaffolding over their roof, and then they had pots of plants up there for growing food. And of course, it depends on what kind of roof you have and things like that, but anything that you can set up over your roof, no matter how wacky and crazy it might be,
I love this.
Is something that's going to help cool your entire home.
Wow.
In fact, people who take flat-roofed houses and then they put gardens in up there, like, you know, just a few inches thick, have noticed, like, cutting 70% off of their AC bill in the summertime.
Wow.
Just this little bit of garden that they grow on a flat roof. So
it
really works. Moving into the world of cooking, I want to mention hay box cooking. And this is something where you'll bring something to a boil on the stove, and then you'll put it, you put the pot with the lid into a container that's very insulated. Some people just will have a plastic tote, and they'll fill it with towels, and then they'll put towels on top of the pot and then close the lid, and then they'll leave it for an hour. And so it did all the cooking without using any additional heat. And on top of that, it kind of bottles the hot inside. And you can even take this outside and let it finish cooking outside inside of the hay box. This is called hay box cooking. We have lots of discussion about on this at permies.com and the forums. The other thing that's a thing I see at a lot of places where that are permaculture places is they have an outdoor kitchen, a very simple little kitchen that's set up outdoors. So when they do any of their cooking, it's all outside. It's not heating up the inside of the house. And it doesn't have to be something really fancy. I've seen some outdoor kitchens that are really simple and basic. And they're made lovely by people and food and just, you know, years having passed with a simple outdoor kitchen.
One of the things I do is that I cook a lot of food all at once. Like, for example, most days I'll have a big salad for lunch and I have some kind of protein. And so what I'll do is instead of, say, grilling a chicken breast every day, I'll just cook all the chicken breasts once a week. And so then all I have to do is open the refrigerator and I've got cooked chicken breasts. And it takes the same amount of energy to cook one chicken breast or six chicken breasts. And so I've heated up the house once or heated up the kitchen once, and then I'm done for the week. And just a little strategic planning like that can do a lot.
And if you're going to cook your chicken using perhaps a crock pot, you could set it up. You could set that up outside as well.
Yes, you could.
Yeah. And then, of course, you know, barbecue is another way that's outside.
Yes.
One thing that some of the folks out at Permies like to do is they do a dinner club with friends. And so then they end up cooking in their home less often. And then much like what you said, that when your friends come over, then, you know, you're when you cook for many people, it doesn't use that much more energy
right.
than if you cook for one.
Right.
And so I thought that was a fascinating one. And another thing is one of the big summer treats is to eat corn on the cob. And I want to suggest that your listeners try eating it just one time, eating it raw. And I think you might be surprised at how delicious it is without cooking it at all.
I've had raw corn and it is delicious, especially if it's really fresh.
Now here is possibly the number one thing for saving energy and in the home in the summertime. A clothesline. And so, in fact, remember when I started off at the beginning of your show talking about my friend David and how I stayed at this house for 4 months while he was in Mexico? That was the one thing that I introduced that I think was probably the biggest energy saver of them all, is that I would dry my clothes, I would wash my clothes, and I would dry them not in the dryer, but either on a clothes rack or on a clothesline.
All right, here's my big question. Here's my big question about a clothesline. Whenever I don't do this, and this is just why I don't do it, is because when I've tried to do it in the past, my clothes get all stiff instead of soft.
True. Absolutely. And so
what
I've
do you
got
do about
two responses
that?
To that. One is I like a stiff myself, but you're right. One of the things that people have done is like they'll put their clothes into the dryer just on tumble for like 2 minutes after, you know, it being outside and drying outside. But one of the things is that your clothes dryer will, if you dry your clothes on a rack or on a clothesline, all your clothes last 10 times longer. The wear on your clothes is dominantly coming from the dryer. So, you know, stacking functions again. You've saved an enormous amount of energy. And on top of that, your clothes will now last 10 times longer.
Well, I'll have to try it again. I'll have to try it again because this all makes perfect sense. I just didn't know what to do.
Yeah, there's some things where they don't get stiff. But yeah, jeans do get stiff. And frankly,
like,
I've kind of gotten to the point where...
Well,
my feeling is that when the towels are stiff, that when you go and use them, have you also noticed that when they're stiff, they're also more absorbent?
Yes.
Yeah. Weird, isn't it?
And they also give you a nice little scratchy, you know, they have, like, Turkish towels are real scratchy in the spa, and that stimulates your skin and gets your blood flowing. Again,
well,
multiple functions.
Yeah, that's what I do when I've got a fresh towel, and it is a little crisp. Not tremendously. I mean, it's not like sandpaper. But what I'll do is, like, first thing I do is when I get out of the shower, I grab it and I rub it vigorously on my back, like I'm getting a good back scratch out of this.
Yeah.
But the thing is, it only lasts for about 4 seconds, and then it's done being that way. And now it's like any other towel.
Yeah.
So, but I've kind of come to like finding that to be kind of a delicious thing myself. But I'm a weirdo too. So.
Well, what's the next thing?
All right. Window quilts. And so some people will use really heavy drapes. So we talked about if you're working from home, say, you'll have one room that has light from outdoors, and then the rest of the house will be like bottled up and dark. And some people will use heavy curtains, but what's better than heavy curtains is window quilts. And so this is a quilt that will roll out over your window, and it's more insulative. And so this is something that's also used up north to stay warm, but so it can be used down in hot climates to stay cool also.
I love that idea. So are they actually really quilts, or is it just called a quilt because it's quilted? I mean, I could see having beautiful quilts up on your windows.
Usually they're rolled up to the top, and then they're unrolled over the window as needed.
Like a shade.
But it's like a thick blanket. It'll be pretty thick.
Okay, good.
Yeah. So the other thing is that rather than have, you know, because we're talking about keep your air conditioning on, and then you might start moving the thermostat up because you found ways to stay cooler yourself. And so having a small fan on people instead of having fans running in rooms where there are no people, or having big ceiling fans, having a small fan on a person is extremely effective. Just a small personal fan pointed at a person does so much more than all these giant fans and air conditioners.
I agree. I even have a little one that I can carry around, but I want to mention ceiling fans, really emphasize that, because I have a ceiling fan in every room. And like right now, the temperature is, you know, one day it's hot and one day it's cold, and we're going through spring coming on. And instead of turning on my air conditioning, I'm just turning on a ceiling fan. Like, I have a ceiling fan right over where I sit every day, and I can use that up to a certain temperature. I can use it up to about 79, When it hits 80, I really have to turn on the air conditioner. But up to that, the ceiling fan is perfect. It really cools you. And they don't cost much. They cost about $50. Almost anybody can install one.
True. And the amount of energy used is a lot less than an air conditioner.
Yes.
And the small personal fan, which might sit on your desk or someplace else, is something that will use much less energy than even that.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing is that one of the things that I've done is that I'll keep a washcloth, a damp washcloth, nearby.
Uh-huh.
And then I'll wet my arms or my face, and it's amazing how combine that with that little fan, and it's like, wow, suddenly it's a little too cold.
I put the damp washcloth on the back of my neck, and that
I've done
me
that
down
too.
Right away.
And at nighttime, a lot of people will put the damp washcloth on their belly at night.
Oh, we've got to go. The show is over. Oh, my God. I wasn't even watching. I was so engrossed in talking to you. Well, you know, I'll give you my one last tip is that I get a little squirter bottle. And when I lie in bed at night, I squirt the bottle and a little mist comes down and it keeps me cool. Thank you so much, Paul. This is Toxic Free Talk Radio. I'm Deborah Lynn Gadd. Come back tomorrow.